Hey friends, mark your calendars. The Intentional Motherhood Retreat is coming up October 23rd through 25th in Portland, Oregon. It's a meaningful few days to slow down, connect, and refocus on what matters most in your motherhood journey. Also, some exciting news, Intentional Fatherhood has officially launched on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. So go subscribe, check out the first few episodes, and share it with all the fathers in your life. For more details and registration info for the Motherhood Retreat, you can go to intentionalparents.org, or you can go check out our new website for fathers, intentionalfatherhood.org. Welcome to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Intentional exists to help parents in their God-given task to raise passionate Jesus followers. We exist to bring hope, help, and healing to families. Each week, we will talk about anything from parenting, marriage, lifestyle, and what it looks like to follow Jesus in our time. Intentional is made up of Phil and Diane Comer and Brooke and Elizabeth Moser. I am Brooke, and the funny thing is, we are all family. Elizabeth is Phil and Diane's daughter, so we're a family figuring this thing out together. We hope this podcast feels like you're sitting with us in our home talking about how to do this thing called life together. Elizabeth and I are your hosts. Let's get into this week's podcast. All right, welcome to today's podcast. I hope everyone is sheltering in place well and not losing their sanity. Today, I have my wonderful wife, Elizabeth, with me. Hi, honey.
Hi, babe.
And Phil and Diane over Zoom. We moved from Skype to Zoom. We're going to see how this works today. Phil and Diane, how are you guys? Hi.
We're doing good. We're definitely social distancing. We're 180 miles from you again.
Yeah. I know. It's good to see your face.
We're missing face-to-face, skin-to-skin, missing my grandkids very much.
Yes.
I miss you guys too, but mostly the kids.
We can accept that the kids are more of a...
They're a bigger draw.
They're a bigger draw. That's okay. We really like them too, and we understand that. Birdie and Sloan are especially they're really fun right now. Well, today we want to talk about five things to consider to bring hope and help during this shelter in place. And we've been having this conversation. We know that so many parents, we just even found out yesterday that school, at least in Oregon where we're at, is going to be not continuing in the brick and mortar type sense through the rest of the year. And so many people are doing school at home or homeschooling, however you'd like to say it. And we just wanted to give some encouragement and some hope and help, and hopefully some tools to really just kind of equip you to be able to handle this in a strategic way and to make the best use of the time that you guys have. And so I'm not personally a pro on this. I know Elizabeth has spent more time than me for sure. And Diane, you were just saying before this, 24 years of homeschool. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah.
So my incredible. I definitely want Elizabeth. I would love to just pass the ball to you really quick and get the conversation started and get us going on this.
Yeah. You know, I mean, first, I just want to empathize with all of the parents out there who have found themselves suddenly responsible for more than they had planned on being responsible for this year. And I think, you know, this hits home for me because this is our first year homeschooling our kids. We started back in September, and man, it was so rough. The first, I'll be honest, like the first 6 months, it's just now getting really good, but really hard. That's a rough transition when your kids have been in school. It's rough for everybody.
Yeah.
And I just want to say, I heard something this week that I just thought was so good. And I feel like every parent needs to hear right now, whether you've been homeschooling or not, but especially those of you who have not, you aren't actually homeschooling right now. You're actually schooling in a quarantine or in crisis schooling. Yes. And those two things are really different. If you choose to homeschool your kids, then you have likely made the conscious choice to do it, even if it's been like us, it was not something we initially wanted to do. We just knew our oldest really needed it, and we've grown in passion with it, but we made a conscious decision to do it. It wasn't just thrust upon us. Yeah. And we had time to prepare. I had time to research I spent way too many hours researching curriculum and figuring out what might work for us. And I had the luxury of all that time. And all of you parents who have been thrown into this, you haven't had that. You've just all of a sudden found your kids at home. You don't know what they've been learning, what they need to keep learning. You don't know what's going to work. And you likely just feel like everything you're trying is not working. Mm-hmm. And so we just want to empathize with you and tell you you're not alone. And even all the families who have been homeschooling, this is not your normal either. Like all of us who are homeschooling, we're on the go all the time. Our kids are going to co-ops. And for us, we spend a lot of our week at therapy for one of our daughters. We go to the library. Like we're involved in our church and community. So this is new for all of us. And I think if we all need to recognize this is a crisis and this is something that none of us are going to know how to do. So all of you parents who are sitting at home feeling like I must just be really bad at this. This is not working. You are not alone. We're doing this yes. episode because we've heard nonstop from parents how this is just not working and the schools are trying to figure it out. And so we just want to applaud you for what you're doing and for your efforts, because we know that this is really hard. But I think if we can just even have that perspective of this does not mean you're a failed homeschooler. This is new territory for all of us. Do you have anything to add to that, Mom?
Well, I would just add one thing. It is staggering to realize that I homeschooled you kids over a 24-year period. And I can honestly say I never felt like I finally arrived and I'm really good at this.
Oh,
and this
that's good.
My thing.
Yeah, that's good
I
to hear.
I always was haunted with the feeling like I'm not sure that I'm doing enough. I'm not sure I'm requiring enough. I'm not sure that I'm doing anything right, basically. Haunted me for 24 years.
Yeah.
The main thing that I saw that helped me through all of those self-doubts was my kids were flourishing and I saw them flourishing and I didn't want to mess with that. So for those of you who are homeschooling, not by choice, I read some books, I talked to some people, there was this new thing in about 1980 when Jean-Marc was born, I first heard about it, but it was a choice I made and I knew I was making the choice. And like you said, I was prepared for it. The parents who are right now are having no choice but to make that choice.
Yeah.
Or if they're like they're homeschooling, so to speak, with their hands tied behind their back. You know, they're not ideal by any means.
Yeah. So let me thank you for sharing that. And that perspective is so helpful. And I think just helps frame this conversation, which is so much grace. Like this is such a unique season. This is not, we're not all playing by the rules. So we wanted to give five things to consider. So we're going to start with these. The first one is that your child's education is your responsibility, whether you are at home and choosing to homeschool or whether you are, you know, your kids go to public school or private school, it's your responsibility regardless. And Phil, I'd love for you to start us on this one if you could.
Yeah, I think that's a very good and clear and strong biblical point. I mean, all through the scriptures, the parents are to teach their children the ways of the Lord. And so we're talking about education right now, but when raising children, it's not just intellectual things that we want them to learn. That's part of it, you know, God's given us these amazing brains and to develop them and to be knowledgeable and things, but also we want to raise them with character qualities that are honoring to God. I mean, ultimately we want to make disciples of our own children. That's really what we're called to do. Jesus told us to go into all the world and make disciples. And so I like to remind the parents that starting with your own kids, because they've been given to you as a gift. And how sad it would be, even for me as a pastor, if I'm up preaching sermons and preaching the gospel and spending time having coffee with people and having a memorized scripture, but not doing it with my own kids, you know? So obviously we're to make disciples of our own kids. In Ephesians chapter 6, actually chapter 5 and chapter 6, where Paul's getting really practical with his instruction to the church in Ephesus. In chapter 5, it's all about marriage, how marriage is supposed to be lived out. And then he gets to chapter 6 and talks about how children are to obey their parents and how parents are to bring their kids up in the ways of the Lord. And then he talks about, you know, servants and masters or employers and employees. But in the father's part, verse 4 of Ephesians 6, fathers, Do not provoke your children to anger. That's the negative. Here's what you don't want to do, and we could talk about that some other time. It says, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Mm-hmm. And the word, the phrase bring them up means nurture to maturity, and it has to do with nurturing them in all aspects of life, definitely intellectually, but also spiritually and emotionally, that they might be raised up to be whole and rounded and the people God wants them to be. But to bring them up, to nurture them to maturity in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And the original language of the New Testament was written in Greek. The word discipline and instruction are two different Greek words. The word discipline there, it means the systematic training of children, and it includes education. It's kind of what we're talking about. Yeah. Suddenly, parents are saying, whoa, I'm involved in the systematic education of training of my children, including education. What? I never signed up for this. Why am I having to do this? And I just want to point out that the Bible says it is your responsibility. Now, obviously, we delegate it to experts, but it's good to remember that though we may delegate it to a public school teacher or a Christian school teacher or take it on ourselves or take on part of it and ask others to help, it should be with wisdom before God, realizing these kids have been given to us and I'm commanded here. It's specifically to fathers, interestingly. Mm-hmm. Obviously, moms and dads are partners together, but God's talking to the fathers here that we're to bring our kids up in the discipline. And that includes education. And instruction is a different Greek word, and it has not so much to do with facts, 2 + 2 = 4, but principles, God's principles, the skillful way of doing life God's way, the kind of practical instruction we find in Proverbs, how to forgive, how to handle all kinds of things that are everyday life issues, or in the book of James, you know, how to handle anger and these sorts of things. And so we're to teach these things to our kids, and that's part of their bringing them up. So in the discipline and instruction, of course, of the Lord, and that just means a Jesus-centered home. Ephesians 5 says we're trying to learn what's pleasing to the Lord. So suddenly our homes are filled with our kids, mom, you know, and let's face it, married couples, you're on top of each other and you're not used to spending this much time right next to each other. It's not really healthy because there needs to be some separation once in a while. And so how do you do that?
Social distancing, you know,
back
at home.
In the aquarian, aquarian culture, the guys out in the field and the mom, you know, and they're seeing each other, but not constantly. And so we need to remember to be kind to one another.
Yes.
Rather than forgiving each other. But with our kids right there, instead of seeing this as an irritation, how great if we realize, oh man, this is a reminder that God's given these kids to me, and I want my kids to grow up, to love God with all their heart, and to follow Jesus all the days of their life. And it's actually my joyful responsibility. It's not a burden. I mean, it is a burden. It's a job to carry out, but it's a joyful responsibility because God is in it, and he's with us, and he's going to give us all we need to do it.
One of the things well said. Thank you, Phil.
So good, Dad.
I was going to just say, you know, it's interesting because there's two different types of people that are experiencing the shelter in place. People with kids who have little ones at home, and then those without. And those who are in your stage of life, Phil and Diane, who have a dog to take care of, but you know, you don't have anyone living with you right now. You don't have any extras. It's you guys. And so these experiences, and I just need to be really clear, this experience is going to be vastly different depending upon your stage and age of your children. Mm-hmm. And you know, some of you are going to feel like, man, I'm trying to take on their actual education. And I think what Phil, I heard you say, which is just really important to point out, the fathers need to be involved. And I think maybe just to give a practical insight to that, how it fleshes out with Elizabeth and I, because I think sometimes the ambiguity can create unnecessary guilt or shame. A dad's job isn't necessarily to be teaching math and science and taking like half of the subjects to some of the kids homeschooling. Although that definitely might happen because maybe you're gifted at math and you love it. So you definitely should share the load. But I think the dad has an additional responsibility, as does the mother. But it's that training in things like character development, how do you disagree without being disagreeable? Yes. Hey kids, your response is your responsibility. So let's sit down and say let's look about how that response, you know, really actually didn't bring about the fruit that you wanted and actually really frustrated your brother or sister. And I think it's important to note, like, I know for our dynamic, I'm I love lots of things, but school was never one of those things that I loved. I love learning.
You love learning.
I love learning, yeah. But education traditionally was never my friend. And so I don't like get excited about like, let me read the kids' science books. But man, when it comes to like relational tension or conflict resolution in our home, like that's a space where I often will live. Elizabeth does too, but we share equally in parts, but also differently in the sense like I know I need to take a lot of that responsibility of helping our kids. The other night they had an argument about something and it was like, okay, it took all this time, all this energy to sit down and basically go, okay, you said this, you see why that's hurtful. You see how you responded, how that, okay, now can you guys like take a minute and try to work it out? So I like went away for a minute, let them try to work it out, the older two kids. Yeah. And they're like, I think we can try. And they start going, you know, they go into it. I feel like disrespected when you talk to me this way. and so like part of me was listening and I was learning and I was like excited. I was like, okay, some of this is working. But then halfway through it just started to crumble and they just, you know, kept going. I had to step back in. And so anyway, I guess just to highlight like education, as Phil said, and I think it's just so important, is not just their learning of things of life and science and math and reading and writing, but it is also hugely relational skills and tension.
Yeah. And I think it's the putting all of those things together that actually creates wisdom. I think we can fill our kids with all sorts of knowledge. They can spend all day at school. They're getting a lot of knowledge at school, but they're not necessarily getting all that much wisdom. Nobody's sitting with them, teaching them how to talk to their friends on the playground and how to be respectful. And they get some of that for sure. But I think we have to realize it's our job as parents to take all of that knowledge that they're learning from us and from outside sources and help them cultivate that into wisdom. Because we know all sorts of people who are, you know, what do we say? They're book smart, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're loving relational people
or nice.
Yeah. Who know how to apply that knowledge. And so I think that's what we're talking about is like we're holistic beings, right? Like God created all of the subjects, science and literature and math and architecture and history. Like those are all created by God. And so we need to view them as really important, even if we're not particularly passionate about, let's say, science, like me. I've kind of like not taught a lot of that this year. But just to recognize it's all important to God, but so is all of their spiritual training, all of their relational training. Mm-hmm. It's all important. And we as their parents are looking over all of those areas, not just saying, oh, well, I don't need to worry about the knowledge one because somebody else does it, or I don't need to worry about that aspect. Like we're responsible for managing all of that.
Yeah, yeah, we need to remember in God himself, he is wisdom, and in him are all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge.
Yeah. You know,
Proverbs 9:10, I love this verse. The fear of the Lord, or the reverence of God, of Yahweh, is the beginning of wisdom. So it starts with my deep reverence for God himself and who he is, and my responsibility to adore him and worship him is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. I memorized this verse when I was a new Christian in a living Bible, and I still remember it. For the reverence and fear of God are basic to all wisdom. Knowing God results in every other kind of understanding.
Oh,
and so
great.
I love that translation. So, you know, the more I know the Lord and the more I teach my kids to know God and what he's like and who he is, that's going to be basic to all other kinds of understanding because life flows from him. In him was life and the life was the light of men. John chapter 1 says of Jesus.
Yes.
That's so good. There's this quote that I just like can't get out of my mind. I keep reading it over and over again, but it's from an educator from the 1800s, Charlotte Mason. If you're a homeschooler, you've for sure heard her name. I'm kind of passionate about her method, but she said, the question is not how much does the youth know when he has finished his education, but how much does he care? And I think that's what we're teaching our kids, more than just the facts and what they know, but how much do they care about all of these things, about people, about applying themselves, about working hard, about all of those habits. Like, I just think that's what we're trying to do, even in this really rough time of doing it all from home. Like, if we can take a step back from the list that's being sent by the teacher or the list we've idealized of what we should be able to do, if we can say, but my goal is that I want my kids to actually care, not just care about science, mm-hmm. but like care about, understand why we're learning these things and why it's important that you work things out with your sister. And I think that's huge.
Even scholastically, we want to create lifelong learners.
Yeah.
We want to create evoke curiosity. Mm-hmm. The more you study, I remember when you kids were a little bit older, we went to visit your grandparents, and they brought a friend along who was a geologist.
Yeah.
Spent his entire career working with dams and things like that. But he was a geologist. He understood the formation of rocks. And I remember specifically Matthew just like a machine gun of questions, question after question after question. And you could see in him all of a sudden, he'd maybe done units on geology and science over the years, but all of a sudden this man's passion for learning about the formation of the earth was just igniting all this curiosity in him.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we get to do when we're only teaching one or two students the best teachers in the world can only do that occasionally, very scripted moments, you know. But at home, that kind of thing can be happening all the time. And you create this person who takes charge of their own education for the rest of their lives. They're never going to stop. They're going to keep educating themselves, because once that curiosity is aroused, there's nothing to put it away, nothing to quench it.
Yeah.
Yes. And
sometimes book learning quenches it. In some kids, like you were saying, Brooke, you are a lifelong learner. You're curious, you're learning, but school almost worked against that for you.
Yeah.
It just wasn't in your case. And whereas Phil absolutely loved school. School just hit all his buttons. And so when we started homeschooling, it was very like, oh my gosh, what are you thinking? School's great.
Yeah.
So this idea of creating a lifelong learner, I think it's just,
yes,
even in the just a few months that some of you are going to be doing this, you are now getting a voice into that possibility.
Yes.
The second thing that we want you to consider during the shelter in place is to create an environment to learn. That's a really important thing. And right now, you know, that's going to, obviously, environment is something that we're all very involved with. Everyone, your environment's probably full of people right now. Most of us are. So what does that look like? Because I know that everyone approaches this differently, and everyone needs something different. And so Diane, you just pointed out, traditional education was not like the thing that motivated me, but I love learning, and I just have the most curious imagination about so many random and, I mean, could be argued stupid things. I love learning. I love documentaries, and I love learning on all fronts. I love reading. I love documentaries. I love just ingesting knowledge. I love going on a really good, educational binge of something through YouTube that, you know, because you can, it can like train you on something. And I learn all these random facts, and our kids have still yet to stump me. They ask me just the most random questions, like, Dad, did you know? And then half the time I'm like, kids, I do know, but not because
I keep doing that with you. I'll learn something while I'm teaching the kids. I'll say, did you know this like history fact? And you're like, yeah, I knew about that.
But it's not, but it sounds like I'm hearing it. It's not because like I've like become a history buff. It's like I love learning in different ways. But that said, how do we create an environment to learn? And specifically, how do we create an environment for those who have, maybe even in our home, different needs for different environments?
Yeah, man. Mm-hmm. I think before I say anything, for anybody who just heard that and feels like, oh gosh, it's going to be another thing I'm not doing well, like our environment is not going how I would hope, like, please know that we're with you in that. We understand that. That has been this last year of a journey for me of trying to figure out. I think it started with the year of how do I fit this in so that I can do this? And then I had to quickly realize, oh, how I might want to do it might not be how my kids learn best. Mm-hmm. And we've learned through all of our journey with Birdie and all of her sensory processing stuff. All of her teachers have told me on numerous occasions that a stressed or anxious brain actually can't learn anything new, like literally can't learn. Yeah. And that was so eye-opening to me that when our home is stressed or frantic, or when I'm stressed or frantic and I'm projecting that onto my kids, I'm literally stopping their ability. And then I'm trying to teach them something and I'm frustrated that they can't learn it. Like they actually can't absorb it. Yes. Because it's even a way that our that we kind of self-preservation preserve ourselves. So I think we have to be just aware of what our home is feeling like and sometimes even looking like, and what are the small things you can do to create a space, even if it's just a little corner of your home that feels just cozy and ordered, even if the rest is a disaster, because I'm sure all of us, all of our houses are a disaster right now with everybody home all the time. But what's a little space you can clear that feels like a space people could think freely? And then I think one of the big things I've been having to learn that's been really tricky for me is I have two that I'm teaching right now who could not be more different and could not need more different of things. And and yet I'm combined teaching a lot because they're close enough in age. And that's been really tricky to navigate. I think it's really easy for me to let my oldest set the tone as this is the way it should be because he's been around the longest and I'm most familiar with how he needs to, what he needs to thrive. But my daughter, Scarlett, needs something totally different. And so I think she stumped me for a little while. I could see it wasn't working, but I didn't quite know what to do. And we've just slowly had to make changes. And I finally feel like we're getting there. But I think if you can assess each of your kids, maybe one of them is doing great with the list of stuff that the teacher is sending. And they're liking having a list and they're just getting through it and they're done for the day. And maybe one of them is absolutely hating every moment of it and struggling and missing things. And so then they're feeling defeated and like a failure. I just want to give you the courage to take a minute and say, what do I need to do, even if it's drastic, even if it's not popular? Do I need to stop everything? I had one friend who was just about to completely unenroll her kids from public school and then planning on enrolling them again next year when school started because her kids were just floundering under everything the teachers were sending home and it just was not working. And they ended up actually calling both the teachers and saying, this is not working. And they were able to work some things out with the teachers, but they just were ready to do whatever it took to make it work. And then actually the one daughter who was struggling, they've created like in one of their other daughter's cribs, they made like kind of a fort and a tent and made her like a space to work, and she's loving it and she's been thriving the last few days. But I think we just want to give you the courage to don't be afraid to do something drastic like that. Unenroll them from school and read with them every day and just do that for the rest of the year. Like whatever it is that individual kid needs, you're not failing if one of them it's working great and the other one it's not working at all.
Yeah, Diana, be curious from you as you were raising the kids, how did you create an environment to learn?
Well, I was actually just on a Zoom call last night with Rebecca, and we just got to talking about homeschool or something, and I reminded her, and she kind of remembered some of this, that when she entered kindergarten, I was using a reading curriculum, and some of you, your kids, you're kind of panicked because your kids have stopped their progress on learning. So you especially listen up to this. I was doing this reading program called Sing, Spell, Read, and Write. Remember that?
I remember it. Oh, yeah.
There was so little curriculum available at the time. This was good. And Rebecca was stuck between blending sounds together to make a word. So she knew all the individual sounds and vowel combinations. She couldn't actually put it all together. And we went, we stopped school every year between Thanksgiving and Christmas because Phil was a music and worship pastor at the time. And Christmas time was when all the productions happened and all that, way back in the day when churches did those big productions with live animals and all that. And so as a family, we just quit school between that about 6 week period and just did life. You know, we didn't do any school. We still read books, but we were together as a family involved with people. So I was really worried because she wasn't progressing like I thought she should. So we quit school for the 6 weeks, We went back the very first week of the January semester system, and she opened her first book, and she's reading fluently. I'd done nothing. Somehow in that period of rest from learning, her brain had just somehow put it together. A brain scientist could probably explain what happened. But honestly, we ended up, I was still sticking with the curriculum until maybe about 5 weeks later, I realized she knows all that. She knows how to read.
Yeah.
I can stop teaching her how to read because she's so far ahead of this curriculum.
Yeah.
And that should give all of us hope, is that your kids, our brains are gobbling up information. If you need to give them a break from strict page learning, they're still going to be developing and learning. They're not going to get further and further behind.
No.
They're still going to be progressing and maybe be better able this fall to go to school to wholeheartedly learn again.
That's so good, Mom. That's just got to be a relief and encouragement to so many parents that, I've heard that from other people as well, that sometimes when you just stop and take a break, it's like it can just all catch up and it can actually sink in and there's no pressure, you know? And I think some kids are feeling pressure they don't even know they're feeling. And when we can just take all that off, they can really excel. We've seen that even with our son with math. Yeah. He was just feeling like he was terrible at it and felt so behind. And this year we've just taken a gentler, easier approach and he's just excelled. Yeah. The other night he asked if he could do math before bed because it sounded fun. So,
it's overwhelming. I don't know what to do with it.
You said is take the pressure off.
Yeah.
The advantage you have right now is nobody's going to grade those papers. So moms and dads, do not grade their papers. Do not mark them wrong. Schools are trying to imitate in many ways what you do at home. They're trying to teach their kids. But the reason we have all the grading and stuff is so that a teacher can know where each of those kids in her classroom are at. You don't really need that as a parent. You know by looking at the page that tomorrow we need to work on multiplication tables because division is taking too long. So take the pressure off and you'll be amazed at how some kids especially will excel. On the other hand, there are some kids who just love a challenge. Mm-hmm. So like you were saying, know your children. Maybe your child needs a challenge that if he can get through this page in math, some great thing is he gets to do, gets to happen. There's some great reward. School just can't do that. They're rewarding you with grades. But you can do that right now. And you just can bump your child up into this learner that you're trying to create.
Yeah. And I think, Mom, I mean, we're kind of going on some rabbit trails, but I think, you know, we've talked about the tools of discipline before and the box, and encouragement is one of those tools. It's one of the sides of the box. I think encouragement right now for our kids could not be more needed. Like motivating them by encouraging them, by being so proud of them, not because they got 100% on the worksheet, but because you see them working so hard, because you see them being diligent. Acknowledge how hard this is for them. Because this is traumatizing for them in many ways. They had just built this relationship with their teacher and their friends, and all of a sudden that's gone. And, you know, this is a big deal for them, especially the kids who love school or love the social aspect. And but I think encouragement is huge right now for our kids.
Which I would say brings us to the third thing, which is people before productivity.
People
really matter. You know, I think that's actually a really important thing. And it's funny. So Elizabeth was kind of jotting down some of these points, and this was actually, she wrote this point down, which
I need to hear it,
which is more my mantra, but it coming from her, I think is actually really important because, you know, I think your tendency, not to expose you, but I will.
It's okay. Go
no,
for
I'm
it.
No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm not exposing at all, but you know, obviously we all have different, areas and leanings, and, you know, productivity is something that is more natural to you, and efficiency is really important to you.
Checking all the boxes off a list.
Yes. And I know about the efficiency thing firsthand. But that said, I think this is actually a really important thing. How do you consider this and creating an environment of hope and help as we find ourselves in this situation, making these little image bearers more important than productivity, I think is really important. But honey, do you want to expand on that, or Phil and Diane, anything on that real quick?
No, I think we've been talking a lot about this, of just taking that minute and to stop and notice how they're actually doing. How are they learning? Not just what are they learning? What are they loving? What are they hating? And if the thing that they're hating, is that something that you can make a change with? You know, some things they just have to do. Some kids just are always going to hate math no matter what way it's being taught, and they have to learn math. There's always going to be things like that. But are they, you know, I put this down because I've literally completely changed curriculums and paths two major times this year because what I was doing didn't work for my kids. And one of them didn't work for me. One of them didn't work for the kids at all. We were all just stressed, and started out with one of them was this beautifully written curriculum that it was literature based. So they had to read all these books that tied into everything we did. And Scarlett was reading the books way too fast, was going too fast for the program. They were way too easy for her. And Duke just hated every book that I was telling him he had to read. He's like, these are the most boring books I have ever read. The first one was like about baseball. I'm like, great, this is going to be great. He hated that book.
Yeah.
And I made him finish the whole thing. And then I was like, okay, but here's all the other books you get to read. And none of them, I showed him the whole stack for the year. And he just said, I don't want to read one of those books.
Wow.
And I had to just realize, whoa, okay, I got to scratch the whole plan because this curriculum only goes with the books. And I didn't, you know, I wasn't confident. Now looking back, I could have adapted it and stuff. But I just had to take a minute and realize I don't want him to spend the entire year hating reading. Like my first step is I just need to get him reading something that he actually really likes. And Mom, you were hugely helpful to me in this. Don't assign him reading, just get him books that he actually really wants. I think all the ones he's loved, he's borrowed from you. We have like a stack to return to you. But I think it's things like that. It's recognizing what can we adapt when we see there's something that needs to be adapted. What days do we just need to say, you know what? We're not doing, I don't want to say we're not doing school today because everything is learning, but we're not doing any structured learning today. Put all your books away. We're going to go outside and we're going to talk about everything we see outside. I think it's things like that for those of you who are list oriented or feel like this is not productive. Your kids are learning way more than you realize they are. And I think just don't be afraid to not check the boxes, to not follow the rules. I'm such a rule follower because our kids really are more important than that. And what we don't mean by that is don't do anything. Just be lazy. If your kid pushes back, don't do anything. I just think we have to be really flexible right now, and we have to be willing to adapt the plan every day if need be, you know?
Yeah. Don't take yourself too seriously. I love that your last sentence in we're all looking at her notes that she wrote at 6 o'clock this morning. Her last sentence on that one is adapting ourselves and our plans along the way.
Yeah,
that sums up that point entirely. People before productivity, which results in adapting ourselves and our plans along the way.
Yes, yeah. Which leads to number four, which is be quick to apologize and quick to listen. Phil, I feel like you're going to have some wisdom for us in this, but man, that is an important thing. And I know, and here's how I know that it's important to you. Because a little insight to Elizabeth and I's marriage. Elizabeth is, I do stupid stuff all the time because I feel like that's just part of my nature. That's how I learn, is the hard way. And I learn well. But I often I'm like, let me just go there to make sure I shouldn't go there. Yep, that's right. Like, relationally shouldn't go there. Shouldn't have said that. Shouldn't have done that. So that's kind of my way through moving through the world. So pray for my wife, please. But, you know, one of the things we kind of discovered in our own marriage I discovered about my wife specifically, is that it's not like I always end up apologizing, especially like after an argument or disagreement, or as our wonderful dear friend who we love very much, Emerson Eggerich, says, heated fellowship. Whenever we get over that moment, you know, we always apologize, always. But like, we started realizing, I started realizing that it wasn't just like that I apologized. It was that I needed to, it bothered her if I didn't apologize quickly. Like that it took me so long to get to an apology because I'm like, I need to understand why I need to apologize, which is just pride and arrogance and stupidity on my front. But that said, like there was a quickness to it, which I realized like once I started actually understanding that and then stepping into it, it stopped like all of this extra drama. And it, you know, it stopped a lot of the argument from going even further and getting even messier. You know, it is, if you're married or in any kind of close relationship, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But the quickness I thought was actually important. That was a long way to say, I think we not only need to apologize, but be quick to apologize, quick to listen. Phil, tell us why we need to do that. Because I know that you know the answer to that.
Well, when we sin in word or in deed, we're sinning against God, who's holy and perfect, but we're also sinning against the other person that we've spoken ill towards or evil against. And sin breaks fellowship, okay? And we need to be in fellowship with God and in fellowship with one another, because Jesus said the greatest commandment is that you love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and you love your neighbor as yourself. And so... And that's everyone that we come into contact with. And so when we hurt one another, it breaks the fellowship. And so God wants to restore. He wants to, through Jesus Christ, our relationship with the Holy God can be restored. And then through forgiving one another when we sin against each other, fellowship can be restored and closeness can be restored. And so this is something that a family has to learn how to resolve conflict if it's going to be a home that's filled with love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, the things that God is. Yeah. If the home is going to be a place where God's spirit is moving and dwelling and his presence is there, we have to know how to forgive each other when we hurt each other. And we will hurt each other.
Yeah.
And
yes.
So as far as being quick to apologize, the sooner the better. As long as it's a genuine apology, you know, and not just sorry. I'm not really sorry, but I have to say sorry.
Tone matters. Yeah, tone absolutely matters.
Yeah.
I happen to have a quote here.
Yeah.
To just from a book called When Sorry Isn't Enough.
That's a great title.
It's by Gary Chapman and a co-worker, Jennifer Thomas. And Gary Chapman is the one who wrote the Love Languages book.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
Five Languages of Love. And they break down an apology into five steps that all of us kind of need to have us go through instead of just, I'm sorry, like Phil said, these steps in order to reconcile our relationship after a breakdown. So, the steps.
Yes, tell us.
I'm reading this. Are all the things that Phil has been, your dad Elizabeth has been teaching us.
Yeah,
me too. I mean, this I didn't know this going into our marriage. This is what he's been teaching us, and he has gotten it all from the scriptures. So here's a confirmation from a world-renowned psychologist. Saying the five steps, the five components, he says, of an effective apology. Number one, expressing regret. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really expressing regret. Number two, accepting responsibility.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was wrong. Does this sound familiar, Elizabeth?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yep.
Number three, making restitution. How can I make this right now?
Mm.
Good one. Number four, genuinely repenting. I want to change. I really don't want to keep doing this to you. And lastly, requesting forgiveness. Can you find it in your heart to forgive me? Which is really what your dad taught all of us, which was for us, maybe was a little shorter. We didn't go through every step, but all of this is what's involved in what Gary Chapman calls an effective apology.
Yeah, so, you know, we need to apologize for the specific offense. you know, one of your kids says, I hate you. And you say, no, no. Like, Brooke, you take your kids aside. We don't say that in our home. We don't hate each other. We hate sin and we hate yeah. Satan, but we don't hate in each other. So it would be, I'm so sorry that I said I hate you. It was wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm really sorry about that. Will you please forgive me? Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's a specific thing. You're saying, this is what I did. You're taking acknowledging, I'm taking responsibility for something I said I shouldn't have said. And by the way, parents, we say things we shouldn't say all the time. Yeah. And we need to be remembered. This is the James chapter 3 talks about the danger of the tongue.
Yeah.
You know, that it's a small little part of our body, but it can cause huge damage.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's illustrations that, you know, there's a whole sermon there on the danger of the tongue. But Jesus said in Matthew chapter 12, I say to you, every careless word that men shall speak, they shall render account for it in the day of judgment. For by your words you shall be justified, and by your words you shall be condemned. And that word, every careless word, is worthless word. So when we say things that are hurtful and attacking and critical, they're worthless. And God is going to say, I gave you that moment to be used to build others up. Any authority we have as parents are to build our kids up. It doesn't mean we don't correct them, but we correct them lovingly. And so this idea of apology is really, really, really important, because we're representing God to our kids. So use a couple of scriptures, Ephesians chapter 4, verses 25 to 32. You know, in fact, parents listening and you're sheltering in place at home, this is a great chapter to talk about with your kids. Ephesians 4, 25 to 32, one of the best passages in the New Testament on relationships. But verse 31 says, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you, along with all malice, which is I don't want to hurt you. Mm-hmm. It's put that all away from you. And instead, be kind to us. It's verse 32, Ephesians 4, be kind to one another, forgiving each other.
Yes.
How? Just as God in Christ also has forgiven you. So God has forgiven all of our sin through Jesus Christ's death on the cross. And so how could we then turn around and not forgive one another? In this shelter in place moment where we're on top of each other, there's going to be a lot of stepping on one another and brushing up against each other and not enough space and things that are said that are hurtful. And so we need to be kind to each other. We need to be tender-hearted towards each other. We need to be careful with each other. We need to be quick to forgive. And you talked about being quick to forgive, and I think you mentioned James chapter 1 just kind of in passing, yep. Although you didn't quote it, Brooke, but in James chapter 1 it says, this you know, my beloved brothers, let everyone be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger, for the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God. So we need to listen well to one another and be quick to hear and be sensitive. Like, I think I just said something hurtful.
Yeah.
And so the faster we can mend that, the better. And this is something we all have to learn. And the more we're filled with the Holy Spirit, the more sensitive we're going to be to when we hurt other people.
And I think that's so not only well said, but also it comes to mind that, you know, I know if you're a leader, especially if you're a person who is responsible for leading not only your family, but even leading in the workplace or managing or leading a church or a pastor, you have to take responsibility and learn how to resolve conflict in a biblical way. That's why Jesus equates the family to leadership in so many ways. But what a great, Phil, I know you've always said this, but what a great opportunity to practice in your home, the gentleness, the kindness, the ability to resolve conflict. I think it's so important.
Yeah, you know, we're talking about, you know, our children here, but let's just in marriage, this is incredibly important, because
yes.
The best gift we can give our kids after leading them to Jesus is a godly and fun and solid marriage where our kids know mom and dad love each other. We see them work out conflict. They're never leaving us. Our home is secure. You know, I had the privilege over my years of ministry of meeting some amazing leaders, and one of them that I can't believe I got to actually be with on more than one occasion is Cliff Barrows, who's with the Lord now. He was Billy Graham's worship leader, right-hand man, amazing man of God. And I heard him speak once, and he said something that I now put in all my wedding ceremonies that I get to do. And he said, when I'm doing a wedding, I say this, and good marriages are made up of 12 words.
And everybody goes,
hey, give me the 12 words. Here they are. I was wrong. I am sorry. Please forgive me. I love you.
There it is.
12 words. We need to say to each other, I was wrong. That's the personal responsibility. I am sorry. That's the repentance. Please forgive me. That's asking the person to forgive, and I love you.
Oh, that's great. I remember you, as you were doing our wedding, you and John Mark both did Elizabeth and I's wedding. And I remember going through that and repeating those. Mm-hmm. I remember you saying that, but then I mean, I've done, especially when we lived in Los Angeles, I did so many weddings. I mean, I've done upwards of 15, 20 weddings and or more. I mean, I have to count. Yeah. I have more than that for sure. But yeah, I remember taking that phrase, and that phrase is always the moment where you just see every other married couple that's attending and watching just go, like hold hands or nudge each other. Like, hey, like,
did you hear that, honey?
You should be apologetic.
I have one more very profound quote, actually, from a book called Oh, the Places You'll Go.
Seuss.
And he says this, here's reality. I'm sorry to say, but sadly it's true, that bang-ups and hang-ups can happen to you.
I love that.
I feel like that leads us to our last thing to consider, which is the fifth thing in this podcast, which is actually read. We should read. Read not only yourself, read the scriptures, read spiritual writers, read devotionals, but also read to your kids.
Read Dr. Seuss, yes.
Read to your kids a lot. You know, reading to your kids, Elizabeth's been doing this, but read to your kids a lot, and the retention is huge. But I know, honey, why don't you close us on this thought right here of read?
Yeah, I know that for a lot of you, that doesn't feel like enough. And let me just leave you with this that might make it feel like a little more than you maybe thought it was. There's been so much work done on this and the power of reading to our children, like read alouds to our children. There's a great resource called Read Aloud Revival. Yep. She has a podcast. She has a website. She's done so much work on this.
Sarah McKenzie.
Yeah.
I get all of her.
Yeah. And she has book list according to age, best read alouds for a family. Like there's endless resources there. But there was a 40-year study, okay, 40-year study on the effect of what they called free voluntary reading, meaning the children were able to pick books that were interesting to them, and they read a lot. And it showed that these kids learned more doing it that way than any sort of structured reading program or workbook or, you know, oftentimes when they're reading in school, they're reading a couple paragraphs, and then they're having to answer questions to make sure they understood it. So it worked way better than any sort of curriculum or structured reading workbook. And it showed that, okay, listen to this. Here's the areas they drastically excelled, these kids who did it this way versus the other way. They excelled in comprehension, vocabulary, spelling, academic achievement overall, writing, and general knowledge of any sort just by reading things that they were interested in voluntarily. I'm sure with some guidance of, hey, you need to go read for a half hour or whatever. But I think that if you're confused and if what the schools are sending is not working and or it's just a bad day, just pile on the couch and read. Not, it doesn't have to be read to them for an hour. I think I didn't used to love to read out loud. Reading out loud is just kind of a whole other muscle that you have to kind of learn how to use. Way different than reading just to yourself. So beginning of the year, I did not like reading out loud to my kids. And I felt like I had to do like a whole chapter or we had to read for a long time. But we just started just breaking it up and we do like 10 minutes in the morning and maybe I'll read 5 or 10 minutes as long as the littles are happy over lunch. And maybe we'll pick it up again in the afternoon. And we're actually like getting through books. We're learning through reading and we're all actually liking it. Plus the kids are reading on their own. But I just think I know it doesn't feel like enough, but there's so much power in reading to your kids, having them read, you reading on your own and then talking to your kids about it is just, I think, hands down, one of the best things you could be doing with your kids right now.
Oh, you're talking my language.
I know, Elizabeth.
That's wonderful. Yeah.
Well, and Mom, you are a natural ferocious reader, and I'm actually not. It was harder for me to learn to read as a kid. If it's something I'm really interested in, I can get through a book really quick, and I'm growing in my love of reading. But I come from a family of at least three of you, John Mark and Rebecca, like ferocious readers. Like, they read like nobody I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's actually quite obnoxious.
It's
when
crazy.
John Mark says, "Oh, I just finished 127 books this last year. It wasn't my goal, but that's as many as I got." And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, I haven't even gotten six this last year. What are you talking about?"
Yes. Which, so take impressive. It from somebody, I am not that, but I'm growing in my love of reading as I'm watching my kids kind of come alive through reading.
It's incredible.
Yeah. And yeah, I think it's really powerful.
Yeah, well, your mom taught you how to read.
Yes, she did.
And you told me that story the other day, how you had Becky Jones talk to her. Mm-hmm. You know, you were struggling, and so we had a friend from our days in the Bay Area who's an educator, taught at a Christian school, uh-huh. came up just because she wanted a break and wanted to see Portland.
Easter
break. And so Diane had her assess you, and she said, "She's fine. Just have her start reading to Matthew. Children's books."
Yeah.
And so you did. And what happened?
And you gained confidence and fluidity, because sometimes that's the last thing that a reader gets, is being fluent in fluid in their reading. And you read under your grade level on purpose to Matthew, because he was, you know, 6 years younger than you.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, just within weeks, your reading picked up, and your confidence and your actually enjoyment of reading really kicked in. And that was about, you were in fourth grade when that was happening.
Okay. Yeah. So, that's what we've seen with Duke this year.
Yeah. You had no reading disabilities. You just needed to read under your grade level for a while. Simple kids books to recapture the fun of stories, basically.
Yeah. And here you are now teaching your kids all kinds of
read.
Stuff.
Yes. Well, Phil and Diane, thank you for your wisdom, and Elizabeth as well, honey, thank you for your wisdom and sharing. And yes, I think it is so encouraging to have these moments where we can pause and remember that Jesus is in control, but we get to also be intentional, right? Like, Jesus is the one that is leading us and guiding us, but at the same time, we get to have that wonderful option to consider and to be thoughtful and to apologize quickly and to create environments and all the stuff that we shared this podcast. So wherever you're at as you're listening to this, we pray that the Lord blesses you and keeps you, and that even today you're just enjoying his presence richly. Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If this podcast has blessed you in any way, here's a few ways that you can partner with us in this ministry. First is to give. Intentional Parents is a nonprofit, and we rely on the generous giving of our partners. So please head over to our website, intentionalparents.org/give, if you would like to become one of our partners through giving. Second is to share it. If this has at all been helpful to you, we encourage you to share it with your friends, your family, and those that you know would be blessed by it. Third is to follow us on social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find us on Instagram at intentional_parents. And lastly, if you would head over to iTunes, if you enjoyed today's episode, and leave a review on iTunes, this helps us bring more hope, help, and healing for families.